this stuff. You can imagine one that is latent to active, right? We talked a lot about that, making groups stronger. Right? A latent group is a group that you can identify by a set of characteristics but doesn't have any internal cohesion. An active group is a group that is identified by outsiders, known to one another, all of those kinds of things. And the other axis is mediated to live. And by live, effectively mediated to unmediated. Okay. So what all the activity was about. Mediated to live, where live is a group that only meets offline, that has absolutely no media whatsoever as part of its life. And something that's completely latent and mediated is a group that exists in that you could point to them externally, but has absolutely no unmediated.
So I would put them mediated to be technology, or it's possible to mediate without technology.
No, I mean media. So what the conversation we're having here is unmediated. I don't necessarily mean for the technology to have to be screen-based. So if Mark Napier is standing up on a stage and talking through a microphone, the microphone is in fact mediating his presence. He's in a different relationship to the group, even though it's in a physical world.
Well, what about something like a judge or something? Yeah, it's
maybe no, that's unmediated. Those kinds of power relations are different than... I want to concentrate here just on tools that alter the group, not so much other kinds of dynamic challenge.
Would you consider the fact that you have that in here? Does that interact with the
media
in a way, or
we're still... So this group is still unmediated.
The one you made reference.
No, I think that's not the part of the group dynamic. That's a mediated artifact that we're looking at. If we were looking at things that you can imagine, let's say, when the group that goes to the Vietnamese restaurant puts pictures up next week, then there's a way in which there's some media that's actually becoming part of the conversation. Here it's just an artifact. So down here, I try to think of the most mediated, most latent group I could sort of occupy this corner. There may be something even more, but when you do a Google search, there was a group of people whose link structure led to the ordering of that Google search. Only Google knows that group, and they don't exist in any environment other than the Google database. That is the absolute maximum sort of mediated and latent group. For active and live, the subway crash example from small groups, complex systems. Right, a group is thrown together by a single event. There's no mediated aspect to their existence. Something that's active but highly or almost completely mediated, World of Warcraft, right? These highly immersive online environments, any kind of conversation, really. It's less about the visual version of World of Warcraft than the fact that people going into World of Warcraft tend not to be concerned with creating offline components. It's the game-ish aspect of that cuts them off. And then, I was listening in the late and live category. This is the hardest. Oh yeah, so late and live is. Like French speakers, so it's a category that is it's a category you could point to as an identification, but doesn't really exist as a group.
Are the people in the subway before the crash?
Yes, right, and that's right. I mean, in fact, maybe that's a better. And so you can see, right, this. That you can start to do operation. So one of the things, plainly, one of the reasons you do a chart like this is so that you can imagine operations. Right? You can imagine, what can I do to a group to make it more latent or more active? What can I do to a group to make it more mediated or less mediated? It also matters a lot, and I think people are finding this already just in the kinds of examinations they're doing in the world, what facet it is you're talking about, right? So the ITP listserv, considered as a community, I'd put, here you go. Here, right? Highly active group, people know each other, identities push into the list. It's considerably livelier than World of Warcraft in that it's in a community that meets together all the time. ITP itself is a community. I'd put up there, right? Because it's more latent in a way. There are more unrealized connections for people who aren't subscribing to the list. But it's obviously more live because of the physical interaction. You can argue about where it goes, but in a way, the important thing is the vector, right? That depending on which of these two things you're talking about, So in a way, one of these questions is, right, what happens if we make ITP more mediated? What happens if we make the ITP community more mediated? Sean Kelly asked that question in 1996 with the listserv, and here it is. Right? So that connection now between the ITP community and the ITP list community, which is an almost but not quite perfect subset, because there's still 1U alumni plus Midori and so forth. So then you can imagine ITP as a tribe, right, which is plus all alumni. And then you're down here, right, considerably more latent. And considerably more mediated, since it only exists in things like the alumni. So again, it really depends on what sorts of groups it is you're looking at, or what sorts of things. So I want to talk about, less about ITP, which I use as background. I want to talk instead about looking at 3 different of these services, all of which use groups. Oh, yeah.
I just
want to
go back on the, I understand the obvious opposition between latent and active, but is it necessary that mediated is in opposition to live and vice versa?
I guess what I'm... So let me get rid of the word live, and let me instead write unmediated. Because I put live in quotes to kind of create some sense. So what I really mean is, how much media does the group use? Right? So this is a group that uses no media at all to communicate. It's all in the real... It's all in real space.
While I'm the term, like the media, I'm not sure that's what it really means in terms of having media. So like I looked it up in terms of the closest thing I could find is to affect or convey as an intermediate agent or mechanism.
Right. So what I mean is the communication has there's something mechanistic in the channel.
Mechanical is necessarily there. I think it could be a person.
I see. So the gossip would also be mediated.
Yeah, or that's what I was saying. Like if a judge is reading the jury's
fair
request,
enough.
Right?
Fair enough. So technologically mediated.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing in the channel is an artifact. You're not now talking about spreading through with gossip. So this is effectively what percentage of the group's communications happen in the real room versus in electronic channel. Considered as a measure of technology, this is 0%. Right? We're just talking to each other. And this is 100%. Right? All within the world of Warcraft. Right? World of Warcraft, in fact, probably a little bit above, because there are some people who talk about it offline. And I'm sure, in fact, there are World of Warcraft meetups, so you could argue, depending on what aspect of World of Warcraft you're looking at, where it goes. But that's effectively the measure here, which is how much How much does an artificial channel enter into the group's interactions? So first of all, other questions about those two axes and the idea of making things more or less latent and more or less technologically mediated? Right. So this is Delicious. Who here has used Delicious or at least looked at it? Okay, great. So I'll go quickly to the group. This is a shared bookmark manager, a little bit like Backflip and a number of the other sort of late 90s businesses where you would put your bookmarks online rather than storing them in your bookmarks. Delicious does two different things, but it links them together in a way that creates more value. The thing that it's called a social bookmarks manager. And the two things Delicious does, it lets you tag bookmarks. And tags are freeform labels. Right? So here is an air temperature control that's been tagged Ann Arbor Contractors. So something to that, obviously, looking for contractors in Ann Arbor. T-shirt, shirts, clothing, T-shirts. Somebody's tagging T-shirts. In fact, kind of, this person may, in fact, be advertising, since it seems odd to be using all of those tags. Hebrew language, the tag Hebrew, and so forth. So the labels have no formal categorization scheme, no taxonomy. There are a bunch of client-side labels like to read, cool, etc. The other thing Delicious does is it rolls everything together. So what we're looking at is a snapshot from earlier today. What we're looking at were, I think, the last 3 minutes. This is roughly 3 minutes worth of posts on Delicious. Let's see. Yeah, so not quite 3 minutes worth of posts. I think it's 100 posts. And by rolling all of this stuff together, you start to see not just individual effects, but group effects. So for instance, here's the Ajax article, the famous Ajax article by Jesse James Gary. And you can see that 1,342 other people tagged that. So what you get when you start to roll these groups together, here, for example, is the literature network. And you can see, I've sort of got this line box on. Right? You can see that not only can you get rolled up, get people's tags rolled up, but you can see the number of tags. Once a number of people have tags up, and you don't just get the tags, you also get the relative weight of tags. So in this case, 92 of the, I don't remember what total number of people have tagged this, but 92 of the total have tagged literature, 68 have tagged books, 42 have tagged ebooks, reference, and so on. You can see here that there's one obviously most popular tag, and then there's the beginning of this long tail. Unsurprisingly, there will be a huge number of tags relative to the population of the whole that have been tagged once and only once. Delicious truncates those because they only want to be showing the tags that are used by two or more people because they're concentrating in group effects. So this is a group. This is effectively the work of a latent group, a little bit like Google, but slightly more visible to one another because I can see all of the individuals who contributed to the tags. And I can then go around and say, I can look at what else Victor Kane has done. Right? And so Victor Kane has tagged 101 things. And I think I can sort Victor's tags by. Yeah. So I can sort Victor's tags by frequency, and I can see, weirdly, that there's the same rough distribution. There's one most obvious tag. Now, this isn't about inbound content, this is about Victor's outbound use of the system, development, JavaScript, and so forth. And you can see here it goes down to this long, flat tail of lots and lots. You can also view it as a so-called tag cloud. Tag cloud manipulates font, size, and color depth to show you sort of relative frequency visually. So here's another Delicious tag. This one is a group of pranksters who created some sort of world longest startup sound thing. The interesting thing about this is the most popular tag is not that much more popular than the second most popular tag. So unlike in traditional categorization systems where something is or isn't in a certain category, you're getting here from the group a probabilistic signature. Right? You're getting a the group is either in broad agreement as to what this is about, or they are or there's some, as with here, there's some debate for what it's about. And then here's something where there's an incredibly strong signature. Right? This is about poker. Right? This is a site for pokerroom.com. Right? So poker is more than twice as popular as the second most popular thing. It is an even steeper curve than a parallel distribution. And if you go to...
I think this is a spam. Delicious.
There is certainly spam. I'll see if I can find some for you.
Well, that might have been right there.
Which one?
The poker one.
Well, the site can't be spam if actual users are flagging it, almost by definition.
But they could all just be spam users.
People, right, exactly. The question is, are they spam users? And the signature of spam users typically that there's 800 tags per item because people are trying to jam the channel. So here's the distribution of tags for the poker site. You can see how sharp the falloff is and how complete the agreement is that this is what this is about. So that's strong group judgment. Here's the literature one, which is weaker group judgment. Right? The second most popular item is actually quite a bit closer to the first most popular item. So it's a slightly flatter slope. And then here, right, you can see that it's a very flat slope. Right? So you start to get you're getting group value out of the tagging, not just by having the aggregate of the tagging, but also by seeing how much or little does the group as a whole think this URL means this thing, or is categorized, or can be accessed by this thing. So here's everything tagged funny, right? And you can see what it's doing over here, which is giving you recommendations about the related tags. How is it doing that?
Based on the frequency.
Right. So it's basically finding the degree to which funny appears with these other tags and has some density threshold. Fred Wilson of Eden Square Ventures says that the programming that the video iPad has been waiting for is every video or delicious tag funny. Because that's, in a way, that's a new kind of stream. It's not a channel, but it is this continual stream of video that's sort of bite-sized and ideal for these devices. So this is yet another place where the group value is being extracted. On the latent to active axis, what are these groups most like? You had to characterize delicious as being optimized for latent or active groups.
It's tricky because it can still go.
Well, alright.
I mean, like, personally, I'm subscribing to one of the text or RSS, and it is very active.
I'm less interested in the activity around the tag than the activity within a group. The socially active, I should say.
In that way, it's like,
right. So this is really like Google. This is really about getting value out of groups without creating social activity within the groups. There's no bulletin board attached to this stuff. There was a day where you could, in this field, leave comments for each other, but that was when there were dozens of users as opposed to now tens and possibly by now hundreds of thousands. So the front page used to show the last 2 hours, and now it generally can only show 1 or 2 minutes of posts. So even the very little bit of socializing you could do in the extended tag is gone. One of the interesting effects, though, of Delicious, here's a tag called NP Tech. Stands for not-for-profit technology, and there was a group that wanted to create a list of not-for-profit technology. They invented this tag for themselves and said everyone in the group used this tag. So the socially active group pressed Delicious into service. So when you pull up this tag, you get everybody who's part of this group: Hibernaut, Amanda B, John Stahl, Cracked Activist, and so forth. And then you get all of their tags. And you can see, because they're tagging things from one another, there are more tags on average than there were on the front page of Delicious. Lots of things have one or two tags. Here, things have many more tags. So this is a group that is consciously marking things out for one another. So the tool has been pressed into service by a more socially active group, even though the tool itself has been optimized for related groups. And you can see here that the related tags are clustered in a way that gives you a good idea of what this particular, like once you know that this is a socially active group, that tells you a lot else about the group's concerns. It's not just the global view of funny is also related to cool, but particularly that the NP Tech group's interests circulate around that. So if I had to put Delicious on this chart, I'd put it somewhere around here, which is almost completely latent, almost completely mediated. And I don't know how much the NP Tech group meets offline. The NP Tech group is much more socially active and has adopted Delicious as a tool. Right? So again, this is, you need to be careful about whether you look at the tool or the group that's using it, because there are ways for groups to press these kind of tools into service without necessarily using the tool the way it was designed. An experiment I keep swearing I'm going to do is to request the RSS feed of everybody at ITP and to kind of get a group mind. Instead of doing the tagging thing, everybody tag ITP, just go out and find out what the cumulative Delicious feed of ITP looks like at any given moment. See what people do. It'd be interesting because I am assuming you could see a spike of tagged things shortly after they appear in the mail address, which people circulate around. So questions about Delicious or about why this is optimized for latent groups?
Something about this graph, because it seems like the one thing that comes out of it is the more we're using the internet, we can consider it as sharing information, and in the physical world, then we can consider it as social active. But then, how does that come? If we're thinking of social groups in the internet, is it still social, or are they just sharing information?
Well, I would argue that it becomes social when we know one another, right?
So that's when there's social activity.
But I mean, even more when we can identify one another. Right? So Delicious right now has the tools for at least some of the tools for social activity, right? By putting names on there, which you never get with Google searches. You had no idea who created the link structure you're taking advantage of. So that's even more latent. Or if you look at Slashdot, which has this, sort of conversational annotation mode, but then all of their karma and rating systems actually break up the conversation, so they tend to be quite short-lived. If you wanted to push Delicious to be more social, right, so here we're going to look at a man to be, and I thought, I've got to go back and redo her tags list. There was a place where you could list your, oh, yes, by Amanda, if she had wanted to put her email address in there so she'd be contactable, she could have done that.
So does this allow for some structure where you can build some sort of social capital, like in there? If you post a lot, people start liking your tags?
No. It's actually quite interesting. Joshua Shackman, the inventor of this, has specifically tried to prevent or forestall most social effects because those lead to a lot of system gaming, including spam, and the danger of groupthink. At some point, someone invented a bookmark called Lazy Sheep, which when you would try to bookmark something, would go to Delicious in advance and say, here's what you should tag it because this is what everybody else is tagging, which destroys the value of tagging because you don't get the sort of wisdom of crowds effect of people looking at it from a bunch of different sides. So other people...
But you got it in Delicious as well.
So this is Brian Del Vecchio, and so Brian has put his contact data in. So there's optional sociability to your question, Marie, that's in here. It's not much. That's not much taken advantage of. I'm sorry, Sean. Excuse me, Sean. Had the old man conversation.
When you're tagging something in Delicious, it recommends you to it shows you what other people tagged it with, and I find myself using that a lot.
Right. I know the big question is whether or not making the threshold of you having to type is easier than lazy sheep, which would pre-populate and have to edit. I actually think that Joshua should remove even the recommended tags, but. It's an open question as to whether or not that's true.
Why do you think so?
Because you would get better wisdom of crowds effects if people took the step to characterize themselves and recommending this. So this is populicious.
Are you sure though? Because there's less chance of feedback you're generating if they don't have information.
There's a scale. If you reach a scale that's big enough, then you can count them. The diversity to still reach common ground and common words.
But the worry is that if you start looking for popularity, which is a relative rather than absolute, the advantage of scale isn't as clear because popularity is just relative. And if somebody goes into let me show you this.
We're talking about not, like, in a sense, pushing a normalization of the tagging and the words you use.
Yes, that's right. All right. So this is what a tag cloud looks like. Right. These are relative frequencies of words. You can see them characterized over there. And you can see here that in the beginning it's quite chaotic. These frequencies are changing around. And then as the group as a whole sort of settles down on the commonest words, and I think this is something about cascading style sheets. I don't know what the URL is. Not just the words, but even their relative weights largely stabilize. The risk is that if you lose this period, then you'll get stability without actually getting group judgment, getting value group judgment. The second risk is that this is a subculture hitting this particular URL. I think it was information architects who have a set of words they use, not all of them, but a set of words they use more frequently. So that you can see, as the info architects get to it, that the relative weights shifted. Because the subgroup was appending its own judgment rather than being affected by the judgment of what had gone before. So things largely stayed in their same order, but the relative, these three in particular, shifted considerably north, whatever those were. I think free font and typography, right. And then this one had a little dip, in fact, during the same period, and then sort of reestablished itself. So you risk losing at least some of the potential value of subculture. And this is, I think, the big risk. This is a picture of a community changing its mind. This was the Jesse James Garrett article on Ajax. And in the beginning, no one used the word Ajax because Garrett coined it in that article, asynchronous JavaScript plus XML. So when people started tagging originally, it was JavaScript, XML, web. Oh, yeah. Yeah, JavaScript, web, XML, programming, and so forth. And some people added the word Ajax, but mostly not, because the word wasn't in wide circulation. And you can see over the course of 4 weeks, I think, that the word Ajax just tips to being the most popular word, and then has become unbelievably dominant. As the community has said, Ajax is how we talk about this, right? There was a thing for it was either a drive-by or a talk. You know, come Ajaxify your website, right? It's getting adverbial forms and so forth. That couldn't have happened here. No one would have put that poster up here. So if you start overemphasizing the previous weight of tags, what the next weight of tags would be, you lose this possibility of social value. This comes in best when everybody's made to tag their own way at the time that they get to it. And then the other, and the sort of lazy sheep who recommend tag things, risks actually gambling or suppressing them. So that's that argument. I don't want to go too deep into tagging because tagging, there's lots of non-social things about tagging. But for the question of popularity and reputation, it's one side populacious. So in the last 48 hours, what was the most popular? Basically Spiders the Delicious site creates all these lists. Someone has done the same thing for who was the first person to pick out the popular links, so it's sort of looking for the trend spotters in the native delicious set. All of these things are being done offline. And they're being done offline in part because Joshua doesn't want to build them into the site. Because this makes it a target for Google bombing and so forth and so on. So if he's actually trying to hold off the social effects. One of the interesting questions, I think, for us is, under what circumstances can a more active group press a tool like this into service by doing things like either NPTECing them so that the whole thing comes up as a bundle, or subscribing to everybody's RSS feed so that you get populacious. You can imagine doing this for ITP, right? So that it's a more socially active community that's pulling out value from a more limited service. Flickr. So who here has used Flickr? Used or uses? About the same. Flickr is Stuart Butterfield and Katarina Fink's photo sharing service. Here's my son in the monster truck down at Coney Island. Here's the most viewed photo I've ever taken. Cosmaker no longer accepts edible images from any outside source. It's part of an argument we're having about intellectual property restrictions. And you can see, I think I can scroll down a little bit. You can see here, this has been viewed a couple dozen times, this has been viewed thousands of times, this got on Boing Boing, this did not. But part of the reason this didn't get on Boing Boing is that I've got, this photo is only visible to friends and family. This photo is publicly visible. My photos are default set to friends and family because they tend to be pictures of my kids. In this case, I wanted to enter this into a public debate, so I flipped the switch. So already you've got social controls. Already you've got social controls over these photos. So you know that Flickr is ending up in the more socially active. It's more socially active than Delicious. It's less latent because you're specifically nominating inner groups. You can see it as well as having other people. Now the Flickr model for the world. Quite interesting. It's family, friends, public. So you can choose any one of those three lists. What's wrong with that model? There might be pictures you want your friends to see, but not your family to see. If you are a teenager taking pictures on Flickr, a model which assumes that your family can see everything, your friends can see, shit's broken. So in fact, they're probably going to change that in the next rev because they match the wrong social model onto the controls. So you start to see the minute you make these services more socially embedded, you start to trigger social cues that don't exist or completely latent groups. Who here uses, of the people who use Flickr, who here, does anybody here have a default other than public? So I may be unusual now. I think my sense from watching the ITP tag is... So here is photos tagged with ITP. Obviously a fairly active stream. pioneered by Leah. So what... Go ahead and say all of this. Right. So we've got 5,000 photos. One of the earliest photos was taken. Earliest tagged photo was taken. And of course, it's all from Leah. Where this is from. Oh, that blimp, that was last summer. September 13th of 2004. So it's a little over a year old, 5,000 photos, which means 10 photos a day on average, more than 10 photos a day on average for a year. That's a pretty active, that's obviously a pretty active stream.
Is this her account that she's adding photos to, or if you tag...
This is everything tagged ITG on.
Okay, so you tag something
right. There's almost exactly analogous to MP tag. ITP is a not common string. It's not the same as tagging something in New York, which is a big social pool. So ITP functions in the same way MP tag does. You have to tag ITP in drawing together photos from a large group. Here's the ITP photos pool. And you can see here, what's the difference between this and things tagged ITP?
What's the difference?
Now, what's different on this page? Here, I'll show you the previous page. So this is everything. This is every photo on Flickr tagged ITP, and this is a specific photo pool called ITP photos. And you can see over here, right? There are formal members of this group, right? So this is in our language, a more socially active group, because there are specific. You have to opt in to be a member. All you have to do to get something listed on this page is to tag an ITP, right? What's the danger, or not the danger, but what's the potential downside of having it be that open?
We can have the pictures of people with the ITP disease.
Right, exactly. If there's any other reason to use ITP as a tag, and there may well be within those 5,000 photos, almost 6,000 photos. Here, you only get recruits.
Are those the only members?
No, these are the top posters.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how many total people, and you can see it's more than a parallel distribution, it's an extreme distribution. Ice Queen and Federer have, who is Ice Queen?
That's Dini.
What's who?
Dini.
So this is just Ice Queen's.
And the pictures that belong to the ITP photo pool also belong to the ITP tag.
The pictures that belong to the ITP photo pool, yeah, so they're all tagged ITP. So it is a subset of those tags. But it wouldn't have to be if the people in the ITP photo pool didn't. And if there are any photos in here that aren't tagged with ITP, then they're, you know, it's an almost complete subset. But that's coordination within the socially active group. That's not coordination for Flickr.
Showing all
the
photos from those members, or only the photos from
those
members
that they added to that group?
That
right.
They added to.
Right. So if Steph goes home and has a birthday party for her mom, that's not going to show up in the active group.
Because she hasn't chosen to.
Right. And because of that activity, there are because of that requirement, there's less than a tenth of the number of photos in this pool as there are things tagged ITP. One, it's not open to the whole group, and two, it takes extra work to get something into the ITP photos pool.
Do they overlap? I mean, the pictures from...
Yes, because they overlap, but they only overlap because the people... This is that font sizing tag cloud. You can see here that the most common tag, some of the most common tags anyway, is ITP. So all of these photos, in fact, let's see if it's ITP pool. Yeah, okay. So ITP pool tags ITP. 397 of the 408 photos in this pool are also tagged ITP. So it's almost total overlap. But that overlap comes from the choice of the group. Flickr doesn't know that this ITP is the same as the tag ITP. So this is a place, again, where social coordination for the group is pulling these tools into service. This is the London Bomb Blasts community, which has, it's not a pool, It's a group. Right? So this is an even more socially active choice. The pool is essentially dump the photos together by choice around a group of members, not just a tag. A group has a bulletin board attached. Right? So we're going now, I mean, to Ryan's earlier question, we're now going into a world where there's a high degree of interest in creating social activity around this stuff. Unlike Delicious, where they're trying to deflect it, Flickr's trying to fold it in. So you can see here, 75 replies to the shooting of the Brazilian electrician on the subway. Someone just said, you know, here's the news story, and then incredibly long discussion about that, and you can see some people returning. You can just look at the faces go by. It doesn't give us minute stamps because it's saying however many months ago. But my guess is that this conversation went crazy in, you know, over a period of a few minutes and then slowed down. But it is an incredibly long conversational thread, right? If this appeared on the ITP list, and imagine something that goes on for 75 posts and replies. So Flickr, unlike Delicious, has made a specific choice to try and provide all kinds of levels of friends and family opt-in. You can tag things, you can be in a pool, you can be in a group. Groups can have conversational. Right? So here's squared circle, which essentially everybody who takes a picture of a circle perfectly superimposed in a square. Right. This is a group whose membership, and you can see we've got almost 20,000 photos, right? Why are there so many more photos here, given that this is a group, than there are in ITP, even when it isn't a group? What does it take to be a member of this group?
Take a picture.
Take a picture. Right. So, if you take a picture that fits in this group and people know about it, it's kind of been made famous by, you know, everybody who writes a story about Flickr writes about this group. Mm-hmm. So you can see here, that they've got a bulletin board and they've got these conversations. But unlike the London bombing group, which is really a group that came together kind of in time around the 7/7 bombings, there's 3,000 members, there's 20,000 photos. This is a group that is much more latent, in our phrase, around a particular activity, which is to say they're not doing a lot of, they're mostly talking about things that are squared in circles. It would be hard to imagine a squared circle meetup, although it might happen. One of the things that Flickr's both more socially active than Delicious, but also Flickr has a higher degree of plasticity, right? Delicious is specifically trying to kind of not just optimize a niche here, but actually deflect social interaction. Flickr is trying to occupy as much of this as it can, right? Making itself friendly to all kinds of groups, high and low degrees of social effects, high and low degrees of coordination. And finally, Meetup. So here are the meetups. It knows, because I'm a member, it knows that I'm in Brooklyn, and so it's recommending. The most active group on meetups right now is the stay-at-home moms group, which I find really fascinating, because in the suburbanized, I mean, my hypothesis is that in the suburbanized U.S., where two working parents are the norm and where work is now largely the source of social capital, stay-at-home moms are now in environments with very low social capital, which is the reverse of what has been true in this country, and I think probably worldwide, for most of its history. So they're turning to these tools to essentially recreate social capital, which the neighborhoods are not creating as an artisan. So let me ask the Vietnamese dinner group, what have you all found in using Meetup? I mean, Nareep mentioned the idea that it is, yes, specifically optimized for getting real-world meetings. What surprised you in using it, or what did you come across in using it that seemed interesting or affecting to you?
I think
to say, because I feel like, you know, we are, our interest in it is very different from these people. And I don't feel that I belong to that group at all. So it's really, I mean, unless I meet them and understand who they are, it's really hard for me at the moment to say, why do they even want to meet, or what are they drives?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Meetup that stands out so much to me right now is just how little there is on Meetup as a group. Like, there's, for us, there's been very little to do, you know, outside of it.
Why is that?
Because they don't have the channel. They don't have channels created for that.
And also, there's not a genuine interest for them to be joining the group, although they're kind of support project.
Right. No. And that's right. That's absolutely. And you're including that. But I think you're saying something different, which is there isn't, even if you're part of this group, there isn't a lot of activity between now and the meetup.
Yeah. I mean, there's less in joining the one for this Friday. There's less in doing that than I would normally get in like an e-bite. An e-bite is almost more social than the meetup is.
That's right. Why is that? Given that the technology exists to do it differently.
I think it seems more personal. It seems like when you get an e-fight, it's like, ah, you have to go to it.
Well, e-fight is so horrible. But, I mean, why doesn't Meetup provide a lot of tools for interacting online?
It's China go for the opposite effect of Meetup, not that one.
Right.
They gave you all the tools that you don't know Meetup.
Right. They're specifically trying to limit. They do less of that now because what they found is that groups were, once they got to know one another, were immediately going and founding Yahoo groups. So there are some tools on Meetup, but they're really, the drive is to get people away from the machine. So they do a lot less of providing socially active tools online.
But can you really say from the website that what the drive of a person to do something, I mean, for me to buy?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not saying that from the website. I'm talking about the Scotch motivation. But you're absolutely right. You can't tell when you look at a group. I mean, you can hypothesize about the stay-at-home moms, for example.
It's almost that something is very obvious to them, which is from the person who inside is.
Right. Why is it that the Vietnamese Korean? You can see here that they have a fairly simple bulletin board.
Or not the Vietnamese cuisine, maybe a single, you know, something that is very obvious to that group that was from outsiders.
Let me see if they, yeah, I think I've got the sort of top groups by. That's not right.
There's one link that said getting inactive members interested again.
Right.
I kind of like. I haven't seen that.
There's a whole section, because Meetup goes around this idea of an organizer or a leader. And there's a whole section around giving leaders the tools to make their groups more active. So you can see here, right, this, I think.
Does it seem like Meetup have more tools than you can possibly, like, it has all this variety of tools for it.
And one of their problems is that it's very hard to make everybody aware of all the tools. What they're hoping to do is get the leaders more active, diffuse the tools to the leaders. Right? The pricing model is the same, actually, which is they charge groups, they don't charge individuals. Right. So, and as I think we talked about last week, there's lots of different ways of syndicating the cost. The leader can pay, the core group can pay, they can dun everybody. But you can see here sort of what the... what the most, you know, some of the most popular meetups are in different categories, and you can guess at the motivations for each of these groups, but you might not share those motivations. One of the interesting things, it's not up here in the top three, but one of the most popular categories has consistently been ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. The meetup is operating in this zone alluded to in the Internet Paradox, where there are so many people online in a physical location that you can actually start to cross tab affinity, and you can start to cross tab affinity jargon. Newly single vampires, new in town, goth, or something. ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, there we go. 33 meetup groups. Even more popular than wine. Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses more popular than wine groups.
Bless
you. Interestingly, they put moms in culture and community. This is one of the problems with categorization. They put moms in culture and community, but they put stay-at-home moms in work and career. So, you know. But, yeah, no, exactly. So, witches meetups near Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn Witches, Woodhaven Witches, Northern New Jersey Witches, there are the witches. Oh, those are the witches in Houston, though, they're not our witches. wait, are there any witches in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what the New York City witches meet up here for. I assume they are more stylishly dressed than the Houston TX witches meet up. We will see. Maybe we won't see. 465 members. It's group number 85.
Pagan parenting.
What are these?
Again, I mean, this is to exactly Nuri's point. I have no idea. I am not myself a witch. I don't know that I know of any practicing witches, so I couldn't really say what is driving this group. But and then there's plainly search, right? You crosstab interest and location, and you could do it either way. I am in New York and bored. I'm going to go and look. Right. Oh, and these are, it's showing me some large groups. Progressive Muslims, swing dancing, Alice Cooper, rock and moms, physics, et cetera, et cetera. And then, there's the Vietnamese food dining out group.
93% positive.
93% positive, there you go. 6:30 p.m. And then the Organizers Center, talks a lot about what it takes to sort of run an operating meetup group. I think the point I want to make here is in terms of operations, which is to say what we've been doing, particularly with the papers, which is imagining doing things. These groups, you can put Delicious, Flickr, and Meetup on a kind of axis. And actually, Meetup has been moving backwards because they've been adding these sort of bullet boards that didn't used to exist. And you can ask yourself, how socially active or latent is the group? How much is the group about supporting mediated versus unmediated communication? And how large an area is the group occupying? How much of that space is the group trying to occupy? You can also ask yourself for latent and highly mediated experiences, what use can socially active groups press them to, as with the MP Tech that Miyamoto.
How many of the meetup groups would not exist without meetup? And are
That's
there
a very good question.
A lot of groups that are pre-existing that actually use meetup as a tool to enhance their capabilities.
I don't know the answer. I'll ask Scott. My guess is that most did not exist without meetup, which is to say less about that company than about the coordinating function. Because imagine that you were a stay-at-home mom. What search would you do? In a way, and then the groups that are already coherent, they may have used Meetup, but since Meetup started charging, that would actually be a disadvantage for them. So my guess is that most of what's up here is a function of them solving an information asymmetry that didn't exist for groups that are already successful. But I'll ask Scott, see if he can give me, if they have an in-house answer to that. It won't obviously be numerical, because there's no perfect way to know, but I think they will have a good idea. I think because of things like ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, FARC uses, Slashdot uses, Live Journal uses, those are not relatively observable characteristics, nor are they relatively searchable. And my guess is that, you know, when you start looking at nationalities, it's French speakers. My guess is that most of those names are people who want to practice conversational French in a group rather than being French. So I guess, as one hypothesis, if you look for the most active meetup groups, I think you will find that the top category, all of those groups would be hard search problems without a service like this. So that's what this is sort of thing. Okay. I want to say, so papers for next week, you write the papers individually, keep conversing in the group, and when I get the papers, send them to me electronically. I'm going to re-syndicate them to the other two members of your group for comment, because I think it will be interesting to see sort of how people react to that. I want to talk relative to your papers briefly about the psychology of the internet reading, and in particular, what Wallace highlighted about the risks of conformity. We'll talk a lot about this. She was the first person to introduce it in the literature. We'll look at some of the later stuff on information cascades and so forth. But she talks a lot in there about the risk when sorting by affinity of getting completely like-minded people. We touched on that briefly with the move on, you know, 95% of the people agreed with this. And by sorting things by popularity, that obviously creates an incentive to write popular votes simply to get those kind of effects. So as you're writing your paper and with this reading in mind, think about any place in the group where the self-selection may have effects of conformity, and where that may be valuable as well as not valuable. Obviously, it does a lot of good to get like-minded people into a room if what you're trying to do is advance the shared conversation. So no, I wouldn't view conformity as something inherently evil, but do think about, as you're thinking about your group for your paper, do think about areas where conformity may be affecting the group. It may, in fact, even be part of the draw of the group. As we move on. And as you're thinking about mediation and the effect that mediation has on the group, she also has a section on the lack of the arched brow, right? The inability to send social cues in the group that says, well, you're kind of being out of line and we're not going to do anything terribly overt. But I think the two really striking examples of, you know, the autonomy versus sociability thesis that she has in that chapter are, one, the face the rear experiment in the elevator, right? What happens when you do that experiment online, where everybody says, the line length experiment, where everybody says which line segment is the same? What happens when you do that experiment online? The conformity rate.
It drops dramatically.
Why? The social pressures, the emotional cues we have, the happiness we feel when we're in sync with the group, the unhappiness we feel when we're out of sync, almost completely vanishes online. Which is good in situations where you want high autonomy, which is bad in situations where you want high sociability. The other effect you mentioned is brainstorming. What happens to online brainstorming? Well, she said it works better. It's not clear to me that brainstorming isn't actually about syncing up the group mind, but it's certainly, you get much greater diversity in online brainstorming sessions than in offline brainstorming sessions, for exactly the same reason. So this is almost everything we know about online is that it cranks the autonomy dial way up. And when you start looking at group effects for classic social experiments like conformity and brainstorming, most of the pressure to conform isn't there. The downside of that is flame wars. The upside is, when personal judgment matters, it's actually easier to get, you know, valid personal judgment in.
But she was saying that it's easier to ignore it as well.
Right, that's right. That when there is someone who's playing devil's advocate, it is easier to shut them out online.
The on one hand, but he can be making a point and not be like she was. She was saying, you're not putting your neck, in order to say something diverse, and that's why, I mean, people would less be listening to you.
It's almost like learning a new language of communication, the way you would communicate in the real world is totally different than the tools that we educate ourselves to use in the real world are totally different,
right.
And kind of like how to educate ourselves.
I found two things conflicting in this, though, that if the online social behavior pulls you more towards being polarized, which is one of the arguments in there, and then this other one that you have more autonomy in the way, so those two seem to fight against each other in a way in how you talk about it, because if I'm going to be influenced to go more to an extreme, but then I'm going to be more autonomous. Like it's
right. No, that's right. They are. Yeah, those are different effects, and I think she doesn't factor that in. And in a way, all the debate around the echo chamber, which is still unsolved, right? People have a sense that echo chambers happen online, but there hasn't been any sort of coherent accounting for that. There's three things that can happen. The group can sort of fan out the pure autonomy thesis. They can congeal on a single view, which is the 95% vote and lead on, or they can split into two rival camps, which mainly define themselves in opposition to one another. We can find places where all three things happen online. I don't know of a way to coherently account for which it is in which situations, except for degree of similarity and degree of publicness, which in a way kind of begs the question, since that's what you care about. So yeah, there are. I don't mean to present this as a coherent accounting. What is nice about psychology of the internet, in a way it's written relatively early, is it is an enumeration of effects to look out for. So I don't mean for you to apply it as pure theory, but rather, as you're thinking about writing your papers, look for these kinds of effects. Look for polarization, look for places where autonomy is affecting how people behave, and so on.
But
yes?
In general, while reading it, I was feeling like, this is pulling the basis under the legs of the web being a tool for moderation.
Right.
And I would like to think it can be a tool of and maybe it can't, but like.
So that is a huge open question, and we don't know. I mean, I'll say this from observation. I don't know that this is the case, but most of the places I can think of that have moderating effects involve at least some face-to-face meetings among some of the participants. So it seems to be leverage for face-to-face, but the purely virtual meetings tend to be immoderate relative to virtual plus real world. But it's a huge theme, and it's a big ongoing argument right now, the echo chamber argument, the polarization argument. So we will look more into that literature later. All right, good. I look forward to getting your papers. I'll see you on the Friday program.